Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. I'm here with the most energy, and alongside me is Mr. Jack Piattelli. Let's match it. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm ready. Hey, you looking really good today. Got a haircut. You shaved your beard.
Looking good.
You got lined up. In lacrosse going on here. Unbelievable. Danielle must be very proud of you if you look so well today.
Yeah, she tries to put outfits together for me, and I say, no, we're wearing
a
t-shirt.
You still can't dress yourself?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Hey, I got to tell you something. I'm very excited about the next guest.
Yes. Let's
Coach Andrew Kirkcaldy, head coach at Trinity Pauling. Coach, how are you? Great to have you.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being or allowing me to be on this podcast. I'm excited. Great energy already. And if I could wear a t-shirt every day to work, I would do the exact same thing.
Hey, the only thing you have to do is be a writer and make very little money. That's the trade. It's the trade. No one wants to do it. So basically it's just me and like 12 other people. But it is fun. You get to wear a t-shirt to work every day, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. That's what you own your own business, though.
Yeah, and I have a whistle around my neck. So just got to remember to take it off when I head to a meeting or something like that.
Before you go to bed, you're like,
I don't want to wake up with it.
Wake up with it in your mouth. Just, yeah. I'm up.
Coach, how are things going, all right?
I'm a little sore this morning. We got beat pretty good yesterday by Salisbury, a nice little rival that we have, and came out on the bad end of that one. So. You'll understand this. I've been sitting here looking at film all day and questioning everything.
I was looking at your schedule, and you've had some losses this year, but you've had some close games in those losses. You know, a couple of goal differences and so on and so forth. You're very close, but we talked earlier before the podcast. You've had some injuries too, though.
Yeah, I mean, we're down, and I think you feel bad for these kids, right? I mean, I got three senior defensemen. You know, one had to get surgery in his shoulder, which is brutal, and you feel awful for him, right? But I always tell these kids, right, like, we never want to see the best of you here, right? We want to see the best of you at the next level, right? But then I got another kid who had a freak accident, who got a spiral fracture in his hand, and then a high ankle sprain. So I had all pulls, which is just crazy. But it next man up mentality, and the guys that have been stepping up have been doing really well. And Loomis is a great school and a great team. And we were down 8-1 after first quarter, and we were 8-7 at halftime. And then they came out on top 13-9. And then Taft before Salisbury, we were up 9-8 and didn't finish it out, lost 11-9. So we've been in it. We just have to prevent that 5-minute lull that we're experiencing right now. So it's kind of to the drawing board with that one. And then yesterday, I just don't think we got off the bus, right? I think of talking to the guys today, and they were just saying certain things like, I was trying to get myself into it. I was trying to get into it. I couldn't find myself. And that's making me just think, okay, how can I reinforce some really good habits? Like the importance of habits so that when you can't get into it mentally, we can show up physically, and then maybe a big hit, maybe a good play gets you into it mentally. So that's the jigsaw puzzle of high school lacrosse.
Now, you've been at Trinity Pauling for 7 years. You did some coaching at Gordon College. And I believe when you were at Gordon College, weren't you like the Merrimack Valley Coach of the Year 1 year? Weren't you? Yeah, that's a pretty good stat I looked up, Coach. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, that was my first head coaching gig at Haverhill High School. I was at Gordon for like 6 months, and it just didn't work out how I wanted it to, I guess, at the time. I was kind of young and stubborn. Looking back now, I kind of regret it. But I went off to Haverhill High School, and that was my first head coaching gig. And yeah, I got Coach of the Year there, which was exciting. And then from there, I moved to Connecticut.
But you never congratulated me on my coaching award. It's fun. It's cool. Assistant Coach of the Year.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Go ahead and ask your question.
Coach, very interesting. I went to the Kent School a number of years ago, so I'm very familiar with the league, Housatonic Valley League, back when I played. One of the best leagues. I mean, if you talk to an ISL coach, he'll say ISL is the best. And if you talk to a Housatonic league, they'll tell you you're the best. And I'm sort of biased because I went to Kent, but my boys went to St. Sebastian. So I tell them I played against better competition than they ever did. But your background is very unique because you don't find many coaches coming to the prep school arena with your background, where you grew up. You played a lot of box. Just talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up at Trinity Pauling.
Yeah, I grew up in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. So obviously, box lacrosse was what we did. We didn't have field lacrosse until I want to say I was like 16. And when I first stepped on to the field, it was our midget team at the time. We stepped onto the field. We had 12 guys. We had someone playing goalie, and I was the youngest on the midget team. We go by birth years in Canada. And the older guys are like, what the hell is this 6 foot long pole? They're like, we're not touching this. So me and one younger kid, Logan, we got the poles. And then we had this guy named Mark Boutros, and Mark Boutros was a defenseman through and through. So when he picked up a long pole, he's like, you mean I don't have to have the ball on my stick at all? So he stepped into that, and
I could just whack people.
Yeah. And ours was our field season. The field season was like literally 3 weeks long. And then I played minor lacrosse, and then I went and played junior A in Calgary for the Raiders. And then that was all our focus was. It was lacrosse and box lacrosse. We do winter trainings there. And then when I was 21, it was my final year junior A, I was drafted by the Roughnecks into the NLL. They had just won the championship. Our coach was actually on that team, and they said, hey, you'll probably be on the practice roster. I was like, awesome. And they're going to pay you $5,000 to be on that practice roster. And I was like, I think I'm going to go to school. So I got drafted. I said, hey, let's blast this out and see what happens with this draft bait, if you will. And I ended up going to Gordon. And Gordon was the first time I had ever picked up it's the first time I ever played attack. And so I remember my first fall ball just being like absolutely demoralized because I couldn't beat anybody. I still can't beat anybody one-on-one to this day. Like, I just can't. I never had to go one-on-one. It was always a two-man game. That's how we got open, whether it was a pick coming underneath or the roll, whatever. And then where I think my field sense came from is that they just put me on the crease. And when you're a crease attackman, that old school crease attackman, like, you see everything. Sure. Like, you could see how teams are sliding. You could see the perimeter moving around you, the mirrors, the picks, the fades, the dive cuts, everything. So that to me was like my education in field lacrosse. It's just being on the crease. And when people slid off me, it was essentially a pick and roll. So it's just, you're getting a tap into the crease, and then you get a 6 foot net to finish on versus a goalie that's wearing nothing. So it was a ton of fun.
But not that you're old at all, but back when you were in high school, there weren't a lot of Canadian players coming to the States to get an education and play lacrosse. So how did you figure out you wanted to get an education and you wanted to come to the States? Was there some player that you followed, or you had a coach that was a great influence on you?
Two things. So Taylor and Devin Ray were from Alberta. They're from Edmonton, Alberta, and they played at Duke. And so those are guys that kind of we first heard about that you could go to the States and play lacrosse. Definitely wasn't going to Duke. But those are kind of guys that they were good. We watched them in the Edmonton minor system playing. And so those are the kind of guys in Alberta, at least, that we started, oh, I want to do that. I want to do what he's doing. And then when I graduated high school, I wasn't serious enough to go to college yet. I wasn't. Also, I think my dad to this day, I was going to go to college. He's like, what are you going to major in? He's like, I had some smart ass remark like party 101, right? And my dad's like, great, go work. So I literally worked and played junior A until I was 21 years old. And then it kind of hit me one day where I was about 20 years old. I was working downtown Calgary on a demolition crew, which was a ton of fun. But then I looked at a couple guys, and this is no offense to them, but they were like 60 years old and they looked like they were 90 smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. And I was like, I don't want to be that.
Right.
And so I said, okay, Canadian. I just got drafted. And that's why I was like, I got pretty serious about this. And I sucked at tests. So I couldn't take the SAT because I would bomb that thing. So I did a year in Red Deer College, got my grades up, and I was able to transfer into Gordon versus going the SAT route, if you will. So that was kind of those two things. Taylor and Devin Ray were definitely the guys that showed us the way that it could be done. But then my dad, he wasn't willing to foot the bill unless I was serious about doing it.
Party 101, that was your major, right?
Sure was.
Yeah.
I passed.
I'd say you almost got a degree.
I did.
Springfield College.
Yeah.
Coach, let's talk a little bit more about your transition. I'm always curious when, and I hate to generalize an entire country by saying Canadians, but what is the culture shock like for a young Canadian coming into a college program? Because I'm actually pretty familiar with Gordon, but like, how was that transition for you? Was there even one? Was it easy? Was it, what parts of it were difficult?
That's a great question. Obviously, the plan, I kind of went into that a little bit, right? Like, I was never used to, I played pole in Canada, right? And I got pretty good at it, and it was something I liked. But coming to the States and watching poles and just the athleticism in the United States was, what I was growing up was way above where it was in Canada. Now Canadians have caught up. They've definitely caught up. They're starting to put importance on being athletic, getting in the gym, working out. That's awesome. I love seeing that. But we never really did that. Weight room was something that I was like, okay, go lift weights or I'm going to go throw the ball around for 6 hours, right? And so not being able to beat somebody 1v1, poles being super athletic, that was super challenging. Slowing down the game was really, really challenging to begin with, especially in fall ball, because I was just so used to, we got a 30-second shot clock, down pick, did work, up pick, reset the picks, ball swinging side to side. It was an eternity, and there was no shot clock back then when I was playing. So it was, you had to learn how to slow the game down. And I always tell my players, it's like slow, fast, slow. I had to learn how to play slow, fast, slow.
Right.
Be slow, deceive when your moment comes, fast. Okay, didn't happen. Be slow again. And then from the other standpoint, being a crease guy, it was like, okay, how can I be the biggest decoy when I can't score? Right? Am I listening to the saying who's hot? Right? And getting in front of him and making his slide, if they're sliding from the crease, really, really annoying. Or if they're sliding coma, am I going to sit in the middle of the crease and be like, let my guy beat his guy one way on behind the net and just be big like this and not allow the coma slide to get to him? So learning to, it was that fall ball was an eye opener for me. And then I just dove into just every practice I was at. I just wanted to get better. And my freshman year was my best year in college. It definitely was. It was a ton of fun. And
probably because nobody knew who you were.
Yeah. And they gave me an inch. And when they gave me an inch, I would tell guys, like, if you see me shaking my stick like this, like, throw me the damn ball and put it in here hard. And don't worry, I'll get it off. And then I was able enough to, I learned too, like, okay, if I don't have a shot and I can't throw a BTB, I'll just kick it out low, like a wall pass. Like, we'd wall pass for years. And that was a ton of fun. And then it was challenging. But the other part that was challenging, after I started getting covered and guys weren't sliding off, I had to learn how to become a perimeter player now. So understanding the flow of the ball and at least carrying the ball. And the most terrifying thing was sprinting out behind the net to support the ball and having to catch the ball for right-handed.
Right. Because you're a lefty.
Because if you catch it lefty, they're just going to smack it. So predicting ball movement so I could use my left and getting over the fear of catching it right, rolling, then throwing left was, year after year, was something I had to continue to work on and grow. And then learning how to dodge a shorty, because eventually I would just get short stick and people would yell black and I'd be like, crap, now I got to run.
That's our call too. This is black. We're just going to go on you.
Right.
We're going on the ball. We see a fish. We're going to take it away. One of the things that I want to touch on that you said was the fast, slow. And when I write about lacrosse, I like to focus on that a lot because I find that that's the difference in a lot of games is the, I call it tempo, right? Like, if you can control the tempo of a game and you're a team, you have a much better chance of winning the game, right? Like, it's not even numbers. People are all like, oh, possessions and this and that. I'm like, no, if you can control how fast you can score and how long you can have the ball before you score, you're in a much better position to win, right? Like, because you have that control over the intangible of, I'm going to see this pendulum, right? Like, I'm going to make it go fast. I'm going to have it go slow. And if you switch back and forth and you control that, that's how you get it. And I think a lot of people, when they watch lacrosse or they're getting into it or their kid plays, they watch and they go, well, why can't we get the ball now? Why are they taking forever to do this? Why are they setting this up? Why are they doing that? And the reason is, like, there isn't a lot of control now in the modern game, right? Like, you have to control what you can control. And if you can't do that, then you're basically ceding that to the other team, or it's just a crapshoot. And I think that's kind of one of the most important things. And at the prep level, from the film that I've watched this year, one of the things that I see is early turnovers a lot because teams are trying to go fast when they're not ready to go fast sometimes. And that's been the difference. The best example I have is Sebs and Taft. I watched them and Sebs hung with them and came back in the fourth quarter and they had five chances. Five. And I was like, all right, if they get three of these, we got a tie game. We're going to OT. And they didn't. But Taft kept giving them the ball back. And I'm just like, okay, we got chances. But then they would turn over because they were going too quick. So having that control and having and knowing when and how to attack is the difference in all these games. Is that fair, or do you think that's like way out of
bounds? I totally agree. I think if you are offensively, you could be spinning the ball at 90%, but be moving at 70%.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like if you think about that for a second, I think like, okay, ball movement's just fast. But if you're moving at 70%, meaning like just being in the right position and slinging the ball in and out of your stick, when you jump and match your people movement with the ball movement of 90%, defenses are, they're swiveling. They have no idea. Their communication gets off. And then all of a sudden you slow back down again. Right. And when the ball, I always tell our guys offensively, like you could still pass and move the ball and still find your matchups. You totally can. And I think it's just, it's the, you want to be unpredictable. Right. And I think the big thing too within that is like, I'm trying to get my guys to be a little bit more instinctual. So when they see a lane, like just cut. It's got to be your teammates. Your teammate has to balance. He has to balance you because I think cutting, for some reason, is just a, you're starting to see it more and more now, but I think it became a lost art for a long time.
I don't know what the stats are, but if you look at Division I lacrosse, how many goals are assisted versus isolation?
It's a lot more this year. I would say that the trend used to be, and this was a trend for so stupidly long, hammer from up top, swing, attack from wherever the weak is. Or, I mean, listen, everyone attacks a short stick. That's not, it's just smart. Like,
you have to
do that first. And then after that, you it's the positioning of that that's changed, right? Where one of the Canadian influences that's been essential is attacking from the wing, right? Like if you're starting a dodge in box, and I didn't learn this till I played box and got to coach box a little bit, is if you can start like kind of foot on the board and kind of cut, get that movement in there and then swing it and then get that shift to hit you at a place where they're not comfortable. Cause those defenses just do this, right? We're doing rotations. We're doing switches, all that stuff. But if you can disrupt that and you can kind of get the skip lane open, then you have a shot. And I think that's trickled into college lacrosse in a way that we see it the most in Division I, one man up, right? The skip to the step down is this not so secret sauce, I think, personally, in the modern game. But I think the other thing that you're looking at there is the isolation in when there's open space and early offense is definitely there. And that's kind of what I was talking about is like, if you get that ball down, you have a break. The early pass on the break now is kind of the killer. Right? Like that where it used to be, we're going to run until we draw a slide. And in high school, I coach high school, that's what we still do. But in college, you can hit the first pass and then you're coming down and then that guy's flashing or he's setting a pick and that guy's coming around. So that's kind of the way that I look at it in terms of assisted versus non-assisted, but you want the initiation to happen fast. And then your second
early pass behind the trailer.
100%. Right? Like it's just the way to go. And the diagonal too. I mean, I learned this a long time ago is the best pass when you're running down and you're a midi isn't the point. It's the second guy because that his guy's already cheating to slide because he's expecting you to throw that there. That diagonal is there. You know, you got to have a guy that can catch that. If you don't have a guy that can catch that, you can't do it. But
well, Andrew, you can speak on this. Couple of things. What I love about box is you're taught how to play the game under control. Right? It's, you know, you get the biggest, heaviest guys in the NLL that are very productive on the offensive end because they know how to be under control. They know where to go. They know they're not running 100 miles an hour. Yeah, you want to push the transition. You want to try and get a break, but that's become so difficult in the NLL today because you get so many great players and coaches coach against that. But it's like picking up a ground ball. I teach this all the time, is plays go through a ground ball going 100 miles an hour. They're out of control, right? You have to pick up that ground ball. You have to be under control. Then you can go 100 miles an hour. But you can't go 100 miles an hour until you have the ball. And what's the most important thing is to have the ball. So you can really slow down to get that ball. And the most important thing is to get that ball. And that's what they, very simple concept, but it's everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look at like Cody Jamison and like Blaze Reardon, right? Like,
exactly.
They're not,
Reardon's a goalie.
They're super fast, right? But like, watch how those two, even like, well, let's even go to a bigger name, like Wyle Thompson, watch how they initiate contact. Like, and like they're getting beat on cross check. Mm-hmm. Right. And they will just put their shoulder down. And so well, where's their head? Their head is up the entire time. Their head is up. And what I love about their games, it's a game of feel.
Yeah.
Like they're surveying, but if a guy's overplaying him top side in the cross check, they're feeling that pressure.
Absolutely.
They're going to know if they can have that rollback opportunity, or they know if it's weak pressure, they're just going to keep driving top side and get into the middle of the floor. And then there's their read there. Do they tuck it and go hips to pipe, or do they see the guy come off adjacent and they hit the one more? Or if they roll back, they know that an up pick is coming. You bring up
a great point, feel. And I think that's one of the most, I don't know if you can teach feel. It's one of those things, and I want your opinion on this, but I think that feel is something you grow to get, right? Yeah. It's a feel thing, right?
You got to fail a lot. You got to fail a lot to get to feel.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. And again, I'm a big fan of box, and I think box teaches that more than the field game is you, because you're in a small box and you got players all over you, and when you're in the field in the box, you got to play.
Yeah,
you're playing.
You can't hide. You have nowhere to run.
And I think that's the best way. I think more Americans should start playing box at a young age.
Yeah,
they should play box all the time.
I will tell you, like when you were talking about your career and how you learned the American game, if you reversed everything you said, that's how I learned how to play box. Where like your strengths were my weaknesses, and my weaknesses were your strengths, right? Like I
didn't know you had any strengths.
Yeah. I was very good at running down and getting the ball. Very good at that. The way you described how you learned how to do it, right? I learned it the opposite way, where in field, I was a wing player, I was a perimeter player, and I was a shooter, but I would go down and make sure we made that run. And that's when I coach now. That's like the one thing I have to, all these wing guys just want to shoot, right? Like, can't blame them. It's awesome. But you still have to do the work to get that ball to the guy that's going to get you the ball back.
Right.
Right? That's the biggest thing that you can do to impact the entire offense.
As long as that guy you get the ball to knows he's got to get it back to you.
Right? Oh, I would tell him. I'd be like, give me this back. Boom. Switching hands. Yeah.
Go ahead, coach.
The party starter is like, it's huge, right? Everyone has this. We're talking about short sticks, right? Like that's a party starter, right? If defenses are so good, like in the Founders League, you're rarely scoring off the first line. Rarely.
Right.
Right. Right. And if you can't find that third slide, like that's what we're looking at, where our party started to do. Like, okay, we've drawn a slide. We got to kick it through X, so we're going back over the top. How are they rotating? Are we reattacking? Do we have to slow down? Like the good teams, like they are attacking that recovering defenseman so quickly because our defensive coordinators in this league, they're good. The players in this league, they're good. You're not scoring off the first slide, rarely, because there's maybe a miscommunication that's happening, right? So you talked about like, we got double pulled. I told my guys, like, yeah, we got double pulled. That's fine. You still got to be a dog.
Yep.
You still got to be a dog, and you got to dodge a pull. We have to be able to do that. We can't be afraid. We can't bounce out. We can't be passive. And that's what we were yesterday. We were incredibly passive against a double pull. And what was frustrated about it for me is that we were double pulled against Taft. We were double pulled against Loomis. And we still managed to get to the middle of the field, not as many times as we'd like, but we still did. And for some reason yesterday, we were just completely passive behind it. But you have to be able to party start, whether you have a pull or a shorty. You just have to be, especially on the perimeter.
Do you find at the level you're coaching at, obviously the talent is extremely good, that it's even difficult to get that first slide?
Sometimes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The defensive middies. Like this, you know, our defensive middie 2 years ago was Mac Till at Virginia. You know, he was the number, we used him as the number one matchup on you know, like Ben Johnson, who was that dude, those two, that was a war in trenches. I'll never forget that. Those two battled. And then their second midi, whoever we're playing at, was getting our LSM. So there's two guys that were usually not sliding too. So then that 90% ball movement and 70% player movement, meaning like if you're going to go down the alley and you have a mirror and you kick it through X, if you're moving the ball 90% and they're slow to recover, we might have a look at the skip pass that you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Right. So those are things that we try to, we're going to talk about our new offense today, but like that's something that we're going to talk about seeing today. It's just being in the right position.
Coach Trinity Pauling, all boys school. In the last 5 years, you've sent 60 of your players to Division I, II, and III collegiate programs, which is very impressive. You've been there 7 years. So hats off to you.
Thank you. 18 this year. All 18 of my seniors are going to go play college across this year. Extremely proud of this group.
We got to update our commits page if it's 18. that is
unbelievable.
Yeah. And the other thing to kind of speak to what you're talking about too is the caliber of athlete that you have that maybe is on your lacrosse team, but isn't a lacrosse player, is higher in Founders League and other leagues in the prep circles than I think people that are just familiar with high school understand. Right. And I think the best example of that is I was watching Deerfield play a couple of years ago and they had a kid and I'm like, this kid's so good. Why is he playing D mini? Like what? He's beating everybody. And I was talking to my friend Ty Sanders and I'm like, who is this guy? And he's like, oh, he's going to Army to play football.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, and he's a D mini. He's like, yeah, he's just a monster. Like you have to also, so that makes your job even harder. Cause now you have to contend with guys like that, that maybe they're not high IQ, I'm going to score 100 goals players, but they're disruptors into whatever you're doing. Because a hard run with a strong guy coming through and pushing your guy out to try and get an ISO, that messes up as much of your defense as a really well-orchestrated two-slide is going
to
do.
Plus, that guy knows his role, accepts his role.
Yeah, doesn't fight back against it, doesn't try to do too much. I mean, tell me a little bit about coaching that, right? Like, Getting guys to buy into their role year after year. And I'm sure the progression is a little different from, like, I coach at a small public school in New Hampshire. I'm sure it's totally different from what you're doing, where you're developing players, but you're also bringing in players that maybe aren't going to be there for 4 years or have already played 2 years somewhere else and they have expectations. What is that kind of one of the tougher parts of your job?
Yeah, I have some young ninth graders that I think are going to be super talented, but they're just not ready to compete in this league, right?
Right.
But I think the one thing that you got, let's start on the easy part. Like I have my one defensive midi, all my defensive middies actually, like we're defensive middies. We love being defensive middies, right? One's going to go to Bentley and play. He loves it. He's super excited to go there. Awesome kid, grinder, right? He's worked his butt off to get on the field. He's a senior now. He's earned every amount of time that he's getting. The other one's a PG going to Towson, right? And we know anything about Towson, there's pride in their D middies, right? Like those are their boys. And so like they soak it in. Like I can't share film with them because they're in class right now and they want to watch film. Like, guys, you're in school. You have to be watching, can't be watching film. Sometimes you got to be the heartbreaker, right? Like, hey, I know you want to be a goal scorer, but your stick skills aren't there yet. We're going to try to get them there, but this is where I think you could help us. And these are conversations that we have with them at the beginning of the year after we've gone through all of our winter training, meeting like our workouts and the small group training that we can do as coaches. We can do 3-to-1 and just seeing them. And so sometimes it takes a little bit of, I think, on-field convincing versus us convincing, right? I think with the club world these days, which is great, they might be one way in a club and they might be one way here.
Right.
And that's fine. That's actually not a bad thing because it actually develops the whole ethos of the player.
Sure.
But I think what they have to start to understand is that where you're playing this place isn't going to be the same as here. Our mentalities are going to be different. Our coaching philosophy is going to be different. What we're trying to execute is going to be different. So it's really, like you kind of said, I don't have the luxury of saying, hey, buy in or you're off the team, right? That old school kind of mindset doesn't really, I don't have the numbers to do that, right?
It's not right.
I don't think it serves a purpose at the high school level. I think at the high school level, our job is to try to get them to learn how to develop. So it's that on-field kind of education of like, hey, you struggled here, but you had a ton of success here. Like, this is something that I need you to kind of take a look at and be serious about. And once they start maybe finding success, that's when things kind of click. But there is times where it is very challenging and it takes longer than you would like.
How much of your, with that in mind, how much of your practices are instructional versus situational?
I think it depends on the day. I mean, today's, the defense is banged up. They're going to sit down and watch film. So today is going to be all instructional for both sides of the ball. And sometimes it's going to be like, hey, like we just need to compete. Our compete level is brutal right now. It's not where it needs to be. We're just going to have small sided competition drills for an hour. And then some days it's, I try to teach, at least where I'm on my old side of the ball right now, like every time they come off field, like, what did you see? What did you feel? This is what I saw. This is a suggestion you can do next time. It's not always that diplomatic. I won't lie to you. But sometimes it's like, you need to do this because I said so, because this is how it needs to be done.
Yep.
So it's a good mix. I tried to make sure we were principles versus scripted, meaning that I always talk to our guys, like when I have the ball, my stick, your first objective is you should probably score. Second is that if you can't score, you got to take space and draw a slide. If you're one away from the ball, you have four things you can essentially do. You can pick, you can mirror, you can fade, or you can dive. You can't do the fifth one, which is stand still, right? And it's just trying to get them to read that. So that's where the instructional piece is always in play. Is you dove, why did you dive? You said a pick, why did you pick?
On your website, and you sort of mentioned this, is it says our lacrosse program, brotherhood, character, competition. And it goes on to say, we teach the life skills vital to succeed off the field, which I think is so important in it. And it's a great message for the players and for the parents, because at the end of the day, they're not going to play professional lacrosse. They're not going to play like you did for the Boston Rock Hoppers.
Good times.
Some of the best days of our lives. But of course, I had to bring that up. We won the championship.
I need like a book written by you and Marty Bowes on what it was like playing for him. Could you do that?
Okay. That's a great story. I remember going up early because Coach put Marty, this is a great story. He put Marty and I on the left side and he saw something. Like, I think he saw this old guy with a knee brace versus a young guy. But our chemistry off the bat was awful. Awful. And like, Marty would come off the floor and he would just be like, just breathing super heavy. I'm like, dude, you got to slow down. Like, I'm not catching you. And if you don't slow down, I can't pick for you. And once Marty and I started to understand our speed, and that took some time, like I would get to the hotel early and Marty and I would watch film and be like, hey, this is what you're doing. I know that you're doing that, but if you kind of maybe take two more steps, I can get there, right? And once we started clicking, like, and just communicating on the floor and learning how to do it, that was a blast. That was a ton. Coach Campbell saw it too. So I think you and Coach Campbell both saw what we could do. And once we started to click, that was fun. A ton of fun playing with him.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It was a great experience for myself and Coach Campbell. And what I learned most about that was, I remember, who's the kid that played at Cornell that played for us?
Ethan
Vader. And yep. I was yelling in practice one day, yelling at the players.
No.
Yeah, I was yelling.
No.
And he came over to me and he said, I wasn't yelling that bad, but you know, I realized these guys are all beyond college. They're adults, right? You got to treat them differently and they all know the game very well. So It was a give and take, and the communication was very good, I thought, you know, between players and coaches. And I think that's very important. One of the things I told the team, I said, I want every single one of you guys to have an opportunity to play in a game. And we got to that point where every single player on the roster got to play in at least one game. Obviously our key guys like Andrew and Mike Stone and, yep, and Marty Bowles, we had some great players on the team, the twins from Lehigh.
The Gauzies.
Yeah,
Tommy Palisak.
Tommy Palisak. We had some great players, but we let them play. We taught them the game, the indoor game, the best we knew with my experience. And obviously we'd listen to Andrew. We wouldn't always agree, but we did. I'll tell you this. We would agree to disagree. And we had some sex. We had success and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you still have Stallions, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's fun. It's interesting. Do you have any idea what the box scene is in New England right now? It's a little wild. It's just like, what is it? 5 teams, 6 teams? There's a team in Maine that somehow has built themselves into a powerhouse.
Oh, Maine North.
The Northmen. Yeah. There are a lot of my friends play on that team. And then there's a couple teams from Boston. There's the Nor'easters, Piattelli, and then out west is the Oaks. Who's the fifth team? There used to be a team in Auburn, right? That's the team that you kind of took over for. But they're all like trying to recruit Division II, III, and I players in the region. And if you follow their Instagram, it's like, hey, this guy signed with us today. And I'm like, what'd you give him, $20?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah. But it's fun. It's like a weird.
It's an old time man's lacrosse league. It's great. I mean, it's and it gives the guys an opportunity to.
But it's like this bizarre arms race that doesn't have arms in it.
Yeah, doesn't exist.
What are you talking about? Yeah. It's actually really fun to follow. And I know a lot of it takes place in the summer and goes up against a lot of other lacrosse in the summer, unfortunately. But it's pretty cool to see. Like I've gotten to go to a couple of tryouts and I'm like, oh yeah, I know you. I play with you. Like, oh, what are you doing here? Like it's fun, like seeing that kind of growth from box like trickle over. And one of the things I'm actually really curious about is how did you land at Trinity Pauling?
Yeah. Gordon, obviously there. And then I tore my knee my senior year. And it's kind of a long story, but I tore my knee and went back out to Nanaimo after that. And then my wife at the time was out here planning a wedding by herself when I was trying to go into the run and make it into the NLL. Obviously it didn't happen. I was a healthy scratch and she was out here planning a wedding. I'm like, all right, I can't do this. I gotta, and my dream's over, right? So I came back here and I was working in Lax, not Lax.com. What is it? ComLax in Danvers. And Mr. Peary, John Peary, was working at Governor's at the time. Saw me in there and he's like, hey, 3D lacrosse is doing something with box. Do you want to get involved with that? So I got early on with 3D and then eventually I moved out this way into the Connecticut area when 3D opened up 3D Tri-State. And then after 5 years of that, when I heard I had coached with Coach Bell a little bit via 3D and when I heard he was taking the TAF job, I reached out to him and said, hey, is this something I'm interested in? I have a new family, being on the road a ton. And I was in the club scene a lot. Which I didn't mind. I didn't mind at all, right? It was good. It was a ton of fun. But like the prep school and Trinity Pauling, this like it reminds me of like Red Deer and like just being in like those community-based teams. We're all living together. We're all here. It just felt like that culture, right? It felt like that culture. It felt like you said it really like teaching kids the life skills needed, which is not done. It's done somewhat on the lacrosse field, but I think the standards that you have off the field are what do that and how they represent themselves before they even step onto the Trinity Pauling lacrosse field goes a long way. But that was something that I was chasing. Like I love that. And, you know, it's a domino effect. Coach Starzer was left Virginia. And then that domino effect from there moved me into Trinity Pauling.
In your time there, how much has the, I don't want to say pressure, but how much has it been necessary for you to be on the road even more to get more players to come to your program?
Every weekend in the summertime. If you're not doing it, somebody else is, right? That's fun. I like that part. I think that part's a ton of fun. But you do feel it, but that's a gift, right? Like Billie Jean King, right? Pressure is a gift. And I think it's a ton of fun. And I think what's cool about the Founders League is that like, they're the school for every type of lacrosse player, where they are academically, where they are skill set wise, because, and this is the best part too, at the end of the day, we're actually all friends. We actually all care about the league doing well. And we talk, we share scouts, we enjoy seeing each other on the road. And we kind of know what players may be good for us versus might be better for somebody else. But that pressure is fun, right? It's a business and you want to compete, you want to be good. And sometimes here's the good thing is your job's not predicated on wins and losses. right? Your job is predicated on the type of young men that you produce that go on to be solid college athletes on and off the field, right? Because college coaches, that's where their livelihood actually matters, is in the wins and loss column on how those kids represent themselves, right? And how they represent a program. So if we can help those young men build a foundation within themselves of who they are, their core values, and they can take that to the next level. I always say we do a lot of the gritty hard work here, which is fun, which is challenging. So I like that they can go on and be somewhat of a finished product 4 years after us. That makes sense.
Two-part question. Number one, what school in the Founders League do you compete against most for student athletes? And if I'm being recruited, why Trinity Pauling is the best choice for me?
I think Salisbury's up there with us. Avon, Westie, we crossed over. It changes year after year. Loomis a little bit. Why I think I love Trinity Pauling, because I think it is so authentic and genuine. I think it is, we don't try to be anybody. We're not. I think it's a place that you can really be you, and it's a safe place to fail in a great way as a young man, like a young man should fail, right? I think it's hard to be a kid these days. I think it's incredibly challenging to be a teenage boy these days. I think it's incredibly challenging. There's a lot of mixed messages out there. It's confusion, right? Boys, I mean, statistically, right? Boys are falling down. They are, right? There's more graduates that are going to, more females going to college at a higher rate than boys are, more CEOs, which is great, than boys, which is fine. But we're taking a step back as young men. And I think being a place where they can authentically be themselves, makes mistakes, learns, but also be held accountable is really, really important for young men, right? I think, and I want to say that it's pressure that the pressure that I put on my boys is that I want to make sure that they're doing the right thing, right? And whatever that moment is like, do the next right thing. How are you representing yourself? Are you in dress code? Are you on time, right? Is your room clean, right? And most of them are. Some take a little bit of work, but like those are the life skills that you're going to take with you.
How many student athletes at Trinity Pauling? Yeah, students.
300 students. 300 boys.
9 through 12th.
9 through 12th. That's all high school. We also have 7 through 8.
Is it all?
8 through 12 can board. 8 through PG, excuse me, can board. 7th grade is usually our day student section.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, to back up your point, if I didn't PG at Tilton, I would have washed out of college, because it gave me, forget sports, the structure provided by the prep school environment is what I needed, because I was a wild man. Like, that's just a fact. Like, and not even in the way that I was behaving, just like my attitude. And I think that's kind of one of the things that I think it's weird, because like I'm a public coach, I'm a public school coach, and there's always a preps versus publics kind of like thing going on. But there is definitely a spot for players that are prep players that aren't public school guys, and that's fine. Like, I think that like one of the things the publics get upset about is like, oh, well, they poached this guy, they took this guy. If we had all of our guys from our town, we'd be the best team in the state. And it's like, is that the best for the kid? That's my response now. Like, is that the best decision for him, or is that the best decision for you? Because a lot of people are going to say that, like, that's going to be their justification for saying that. And I don't think it's right all the time.
I rarely sell lacrosse.
Yeah.
I rarely sell lacrosse. Like, our league sells that itself. We'll get you better. Like, I trust myself and my teaching. I trust my assistant coaches.
It speaks for itself. You're not having a great season in terms of wins and losses, but 18 of your seniors are going on to higher education and having an opportunity to play lacrosse. That speaks for itself.
And each one of those young men, they're so awesome. Like, they are not the same young man as they entered.
Right.
Not even close, right, in terms of it as a young man, as a student, and as an athlete. Like, when they go on to play at the next level, and a lot of those guys that went on to the next level, a lot of them play. They don't just sit on the bench. A lot of them play, and a lot of them end up being captains at the next level too, which is something we're incredibly proud of.
Yep.
Coach, great work. Really a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck the rest of the season, and best to your family.
Good to see you, Coach.
Good to
chat with you, gentlemen.
Thanks for coming on. And thank you for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.